So hopefully we're joined now by Russ Haven, who's the legislative counsel for the New York Public Interest Research Group. Russ, the big electoral news at the state capitol was that the Democrats have taken control of the state Senate with a pretty hefty margin. What impact will this have?
Hey, Mark. Well, it's really significant. It's hard to overstate it. For the third time in probably, you know, since the early 1900s, it looks like the Democrats now will have firm control of the state Senate, which means that Democrats control the two houses of the state legislature as well as the governor. I think it doesn't mean that the progressive Democrat agenda that perhaps the Assembly has been passing in various pieces or that the Senate Democrats have touted for years is going to immediately pass, but it means they start on the same page. And so there's significant agreement. I would expect that they'll come out of the gate and they'll be able to roll up some passage in a couple of areas, probably voting rights issues, reproductive rights, codifying the protections under Roe versus Wade, which are certainly imperiled under the Trump administration and the U.S. Supreme Court shifts. There's been a good deal of talk about additional gun safety measures and bail reforms for the criminal justice system. I would think those would be among the things that would come up quickly, and then laying the groundwork perhaps for more progressive reforms over the longer haul.
Now, for years, Nyberg has run the strap hangers campaign and looking for improvements to the New York City subway system. What has to happen in Albany in order to get New York City to fix the New York City subway system?
Well, as we've learned, the governor actually controls the MTA. He has the dominant hand in sort of the members of that authority as well as the selection of the chair, and absolutely true that Albany is the seat of power for that. My guess is that a consensus is forming around some type of congestion pricing plan, which would create at least a pot of money, but probably not enough money to deal with the beleaguered New York City transit system. Beyond that, the state's going to need to find money and make a long-term commitment to that. And certainly with the Democrats holding every Senate seat in New York City, save for one on Staten Island, I would think they'd be in a much better position to advance that. And it's in the state's best interest as well, because as goes New York City to a great extent, so goes the rest of the state. And there's environmental and energy, benefits to having a vibrant, well-run mass transit system.
Do you think New York City residents are aware that the MTA is under the governor's jurisdiction?
Well, there's been a good deal of muddying the waters on that count by the governor himself. I think one of the things that emerged in the primary were Cynthia Nixon, who was running for the Democratic nomination to run for governor. One thing she really pushed on was who controls the MTA, and I think that really advanced things. Having lived downstate, I can tell you that people downstate think less about state government than people upstate. I'm not sure why that is, but, you know, having lived in New York City and having grown up on Long Island, you tend to focus more on what's happening in New York City government because the mayor gets a lot of attention. And on Long Island, you tend to think of your local government or the national government sort of skipping what happens in Albany, which, of course, is a distorted picture of things. And Albany plays a very important role in everybody's lives in New York. But I think that's just the reality. So I do think that's been advanced. But I wouldn't place a bet on the percentage of New Yorkers who understand that fact.
Now, one area where the state legislature has not played much of a role, at least in the last decade or so, has been on both energy policy and climate change policy, both because the governor has significant administrative, you know, powers under various state agencies and authorities, but also because of the, you know, bipartisan, you know, gridlock with the Senate and the Assembly being in different houses controlled by, you know, different parties. Now that, you know, you had, you know, the Democrats lined up in both of those houses, you know, would you expect that the legislature might try to take a more active role on some of the climate change stuff? And, you know, what are some of the issues they might try to push Cuomo on?
Well, certainly I would hope that there'll be much more aggressive oversight in the budget hearings and the committee hearings to get a better handle about what's been going on, much like Governor Pataki did 20-some-odd years ago. Governor Cuomo is basically remaking the energy system in New York State through his administrative powers. And on some level, that makes sense because it's big and it's complicated, and administrative agencies move more quickly and more efficiently. On the other hand, the legislature is the policy-making body of the state and should be playing a more active role. So at a minimum, I would hope that happened. Whether or not we'll see any major kind of, climate legislation, I'm not quite sure how that will play out. We're going to have to see as the new partnership between a Democratic Senate and the Assembly and then with the governor, how that plays out. And by the way, it's worth just underscoring, and I realize folks in the Capital Region are, in particular, are pretty savvy about state government, but the governor is a key partner in the legislative process. And ultimately, even beyond the budget, he gets to either sign or veto legislation that comes to his desk. So, you know, and certainly the governor exerts power on the legislative process in a variety of ways. So if he doesn't want bills coming to his desk, he can certainly do things to, slow them down or block them or signal that perhaps a different direction would be his preference. Not to say that he completely controls it, and I expect the legislature will be newly asserting itself as a co-equal branch.
Most candidates say that they want to combat corruption in Albany. What are some of the changes Nyberg wants to see on ethics reform, and how likely is that to occur?
Well, I think they're signaling they're interested in looking at in particular voting issues, which is certainly a piece of the puzzle of accountability and ensuring everybody can easily exercise their right to vote. But, you know, the ethics piece is always troubling to elected officials because they're concerned about the scrutiny being turned on them. Nyberg and other government watchdogs believe we need to do many things to fix the current system. As New Yorkers now realize, there's been just a parade of scandals in New York State, and this whole election that we've just just, you know, move past is really for state politics been framed around the convictions and then the reconvictions actually after the federal corruption laws were revised or reconsidered. The former Speaker of the Assembly, Sheldon Silver, has been sentenced. The former Majority Leader of the Senate, Dean Skelos, key figures involved in the governor's economic development are all going to federal prison. So we've got a terrible problem. A lot of the problems have been around so-called pay to play. And so NYPERG would hope that that issue gets addressed, where people who are vying for state contracts or in the middle of delivering services or providing something for the state, their role in delivering campaign contributions is sharply curtailed. So that really what we're getting is the best goods and services for the state. We're not picking vendors under a cloud of whether or not they've been preferred because they're making large campaign donations. Another key piece, just real quick, is independent ethics oversight. The current agency, JCOPE, that oversees it, is not seen as truly independent from the legislative leaders and the governor, and particularly with the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, who brought many of these corruption cases now out of the picture, having been sacked by President Trump. We need an independent ethics agency in New York.
Now, when the Democrats took control of the state Senate for a couple of years, I think about 10, 12 years ago, one of the things was a lot of them were not really ready. They didn't really know how to run committees, had not had that prior experience. And it was sort of on-the-job training, which allowed, you know, the Republicans to outmaneuver them. You any sense that they've been actually, you know, waiting for this moment and have been actually, you know, trying to get their members trained in how to, you know, hit the ground running rather than going through the problems they had last time they were in charge?
Well, I can't say whether or not I haven't heard that they did what they said they had done back in 2009 with the incoming Democratic majority for the 2009-2010 session, which is to set up sort of a boot camp for incoming legislators. But the many of the legislators who were problematic, either ended up getting voted out of office or ended up being prosecuted. So it's a much different group that's coming in now, and I think for the Senate staff, who've been around, you know, over the last decade or longer, and also the senators, including the leadership senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, who, by the way, is poised to become the first woman conference leader in New York State history. Pretty amazing. She is poised to become the Senate Democrat conference leader. And Mike Gianaris, senator from Queens, who's been around a while, Senator Liz Krueger from Manhattan, many others. I think the memories and the lessons of the debacle from 2009 coup and the disastrous 2009-2010 legislative session is burned in their memories. And I'm sure they'll make some mistakes, but they won't make the kinds of mistakes they made back then.
Now, on Tuesday, we saw massive waiting lines in many parts of New York City, especially in Brooklyn. Do you think, in the minute or so that we have remaining, that New York State will be forced to adopt early voting and other voting reforms?
It's got to be on the table. You'd have to just be completely, you know, ignoring the reality. New York is way behind on early voting. People are busier than ever. It would relieve stress on the system. It's got to be on the table. I think there'll be a big push for it, and I would hope we'd, you know, have it by 2020.
So in 45 seconds, you know, any other key issue, but in particular, if people want more information about NYPIRG, where can they get it?
Oh, please, 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 all your listeners, visit our website, NYP, like in Peter, NYPIRG.org, to keep up with what we're doing. And if you have any questions for NYPIRG, always happy to get back to folks. I think it's going to be exciting in New York. It's definitely a brand new day. We'll see how the governor responds to this new dynamic. And, you know, it should be a very interesting legislative session in 2019.
Well, Russ, thank you for taking time to join us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.